Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 I'm going to read this morning from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Text number 10 and 11. Text 10 and 11. Text 10 is a verse that's worth memorizing, if you like to memorize verses. An often quoted verse. And together text 10 and text 11 this is part of the six questions asked by the sages to Sutta Goswami. This is on the beginning of the list, the first of the list. Text 10 is describing the circumstances of Kali. This text 10 becomes expanded into about half of Canto 12. It's a forecast of the future of the age of Kali, as does Canto 12. In detail describes the symptoms of the advanced stages of Kali Yuga. And 11 is based upon those circumstances of the age of Kali. There's necessity to make access to the essence of spiritual understanding very approachable, very accessible. And the sages are asking Sutta to do that, to present the essence of all scriptures and explain it for the good of all living beings. So here's the Sanskrit. You've perhaps heard this verse before. Prayinal payushakshabhya kalavasmin yugejana mandak sumanda matayo manda bhagya yupadrita. Krishna is Bhagavan, and one who receives the mercy of Krishna is Bhagyavan. Bhagya is fortunate. And Mandabhagya is the opposite, unfortunate, unlucky. So the way in which the living entities in Kali Yuga, the forces of Kali Yuga make people, or reduce people, to being devoid of spiritual opulence. The natural condition of the soul is filled with spiritual opulence due to contact with Krishna. Like the spark in contact with the fire becomes fire. The spark removed from the fire, potential is there, but not in its manifest, full manifest state. So the influences of Kali, Mandabhagya, remove the soul from immediate and direct contact with Bhagavan. So instead of being Bhagyavan, is Mandabhagya. There's another word here, prayena. Just like nashta prayeshu abhadreshu, prayena is almost complete. Nice. So, like, really advanced. It's like if, you know, if your kids, you have homework assignment and your mother or father asks you, have you finished your homework? You can say, prayena. Almost. Almost. Or have you finished your rounds yet? Almost complete. So, prayena alpa. Alpa means very little. Alpa. Alpamedasam, very little intelligence. So, prayena alpa ayusha. The ayusha is duration of life. The duration of life is almost always, it's the tendency in this age is, the duration of life will become shorter. As the age of Kali progresses, Prabhupada describes if someone reaches their mid-twenties, they'll be considered a ripe old man. And then what is it that reduces the duration of life in the age of Kali? His comment in the purport is they're not eating wholesome food, that the cause is their irregulation and their habits of life. And we'll read. Kalavasmin yugejana manda lazy sumanda mataya misguided manda bhagya unfortunate, unlucky, and above all upadruta very disturbed. Translation, O learned one, in this iron age of Kali, men have but short lives. They are quarrelsome, lazy, misguided, unlucky, and above all, always disturbed. So this is the sages of Naimisharanya speaking. They're learned in the scripture. They're learned in astrological calculation. So by astrological calculation, they can know in this age it's bad configuration. Or by scriptural study, they know the symptoms of the age of Kali will be like this. So they're very concerned because they're saintly people. And even a worldly person, when to speak of a saintly person, is concerned about the welfare of others. So they're deeply concerned. And they're describing the particulars of why it is that they're concerned. In Kali Yuga, the duration of life is short, not so much because of insufficient food, but because of irregular habits. So he explains that. By keeping regular habits and eating simple food, any man can maintain his health. But then there's some problems in that. Overeating, over-sense gratification, over-dependence on another's mercy, and artificial standards of living, both the haves and the have-nots, are in a difficulty in the age of Kali. It saps the very vitality of human energy, therefore the duration of life is shortened. Too much dependent or too much independent? Independent enjoyer. So that's the shortened duration of life. Then lazy. Well, that's the mode of ignorance influence. And of course, for fruitive activity, people, they're very enthusiastic. But there's certainly a huge population that even for their material prosperity, they're very lazy. And what to speak of spiritual prosperity? What doesn't take the front burner for most people? It's maybe not even on the stove. Very lazy. The human life is especially meant for self-realization. That is to say, man should come to know what he is, what the world is, and what the supreme truth is. Human life is a means by which the living entity can end all miseries of the hard struggle for life in material existence, and by which he can return to Godhead, his eternal home. Listen to this. But due to a bad system of education, and a bad system of education doesn't just mean, you know, going to school. It means the values of society and how those values of society are communicated, you know, like media and, you know, etc. The message that those that are in a leading position put forward to people in general. Education. And the values and the qualities. And generation by generation, it deteriorates. Just a little sharing from the Kuli Mela. I won't go into it too much, but while I was there for one purpose, the about 800 young people were in Los Angeles for the Kuli Mela. And the Kuli Mela has now become like anybody young. Doesn't at all have to be you went to Gurukula. That's how it started. It was like their fellowship with one another. But there's not 800 Gurukula students. So they came from all over the place. And just we were sitting with a group of devotees. I was distracted by something, but they were looking at, you know, they had some agenda of things that they were going to have seminars for promoting. And just looking at that, the discussion was karma, mishra, bhakti. That's where they're at. Bhakti is in there, and material advancement is in there. I won't go into so many other details. In the Fox Theater in Los Angeles, they had some event that was like that. We were skipping details. And it's not to say, you know, bad, but the message of the Bhagavatam is very clearly pure devotional service. Very clearly. And of course, yeah, it's meant to bring the soul to that rightful position, the necessity of this human form of life. The necessity of the human form of life is not material prosperity. The necessity of human life is fulfill the mission of this human form. Realize the soul and the soul returning to the spiritual position, making a permanent solution of all the problems. That's the message. But due to a bad system of education, men have no desire for self-realization. Even if they come to know about it, they unfortunately become victims of misguided teachers. Then Prabhupada goes next into, and aside from having misguided teachers and misguided governing personalities, the brahmanas and kshatriyas don't know. So what does that leave? It leaves the vaishyas, and the vaishyas place in the marketplace all kinds of distractions as the means of fulfilling that vacancy of happiness. Fill it up with, it's a long list, sense gratificatory diversions such as cinemas, sports, gambling, clubs, mundane libraries, bad associations, smoking, drinking, cheating, pilfering, bickering, and so on. So where does that leave the soul? If we don't look at the soul as a soul, then maybe that's happiness. But if you look at the soul as a soul, the influences of the age of Kali are lazy, and even if one makes an effort, then they're misguided. And the whole atmosphere from the governing position is not according to scriptural indication that will elevate the soul. So it's the leadership is missing, and the vaishyas are bombarding everybody with distractions and distractions. You got to have this to be happy. If you don't have one, you have to have more. That's the only problem. You need two or three of them. And the latest one. Their minds are always disturbed and full of anxieties due to so many different engagements. So then, maybe some persons turn toward God. Help. But then there are many unscrupulous men manufacturing their own religious faiths, which are not based on any revealed scriptures. And very often people who are addicted to sense gratification are attracted. God with all of this disturbing element. That sounds attractive because they're not properly guided and they're lazy and they're attached to sense gratification. So that becomes popular. Consequently, in the name of religion, so many sinful acts are being carried on that people in general have neither peace of mind nor healthy health of body. And then they blame religion. Religion is bad. I learned a new one from when I was visited in Boise, Idaho. And Radhika Raman was there. And I learned this term also from somebody else. Neo modernism. Ever heard that one? Boca Junction? Neo-modernism is, in the intellectual realm, there's not a there's not a negativity towards this religion, that religion, the other religion. There's a negativity towards religion. You know, their notion of being independently thoughtful is strong. And being part of this religion or that religion or another religion makes one weak and mindless, bad. Good is be independent in your thinking and your spirit. Not this isn't like teenagers, this is intellectuals. Just leave God out. He spoils everything. And then you start defining what is your value system, and your value system is subject to your own notion. And it doesn't matter if other people buy in or don't buy in. This is what's value. This is what virtue is. It's their own religion. Exactly what Prabhupada is writing in the purport, exactly what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Divisions of Faith, divine and demoniac nature. Demoniac nature because worship is a tendency, so we don't want to repose that on God, though we repose it on something else. What his name was. There was a man from India, a scholarly man that was writing books and going around lecturing about you don't need a teacher. So, you don't need a teacher, just follow my teaching. If you don't need a teacher, then, you know, get out of here. Why do you even write books? Why should we read your books? Why do you go around lecturing? I forget who it was. Famous name.
Krishnamurti.
Okay, there we go. So it's just, you know, creating new godless religions. And the people that are attached to sense gratification, they like that. That's where the popularity comes from. It just resonates with something that's already like in their gut. Yeah, I don't need a teacher. I like, you know, you can be my teacher. You can teach me that I don't need you. Anyway. And transcendental teachings don't have anything to do with the time. They're appropriate at a particular time. But there's this way amongst studying great persons as describing that they are products of their time. That is to say, they, you know, a certain combination of the right message at the right time presented in the right way, and boom, they're popular. They're a great person. But actually, you can understand the greatness of the person simply by understanding the times, and the person represents the times. Like, you know, George Bush, you know, at the time, people elected him and they re-elected him. And we want, you know, the other direction, the pendulum has to go way over the other way. So we elect this other guy. It's just a product of the time. Just so some perspectives on historical personalities is done like that. But there are personalities, transcendental personalities and transcendental messages that are not at all dependent upon the time. And popularity or not popularity, the interest of the Bhagavatam is the truth, and the interest of the sages and Sudha Goswami is, given this very, very difficult territory of the age of Kali, what's the essence of the scripture? Then Prabhupada goes on saying, Brahmachari life, where does it exist in the age of Kali? And Grahastha life, persons that are following from that proper training of Brahmachari in moving into Grahastha life, householders no longer observe the rules and regulations of Grahastha ashram. Consequently, the so-called Vanaprastha and Sannyasis who come out of such Grahastha ashram are easily deviated. So if you don't have the social fabric, and you just go back through the list again, yikes. In Kali Yuga, the whole atmosphere is surcharged with faithlessness. People are no longer interested in genuine spiritual values. They make up something that's like resembles the mode of goodness kindly, and that kind of, and that becomes a spiritual value. Like, you know, be truthful or something. Be kind. And that's a spiritual person. Material sense gratification is now the standard of civilization. And it's the form of it is becoming more and more gross and stark and shocking. I mean, deliberately. Because, hey, our senses have become dulled. Gotta give them a little jolt, so here's some jolt. When I got off the plane in Los Angeles, I wanted to get turned right around and get back on. Just how people dress. You know, the Southern California free and easy. Whoa. And it's the vibration. Material sense gratification is now the standard of civilization. For maintenance of such material civilizations, man has formed complex nations and communities, and there's a constant strain of hot and cold wars between these different groups. And it has become very difficult, therefore, to raise the spiritual standard due to the present distorted values of human society. The sages of Naimisharanya are anxious to disentangle all fallen souls, and here they're seeking the remedy from Sutta Goswami. So that's the problem, and now they're proposing the solution. The solution isn't, hey, Sutta Goswami, what do we do? It was, what are the scriptures? What's the because the essence of the scripture is what to do. What's that message? There are many, text 11, there are many varieties of scriptures, and in all of them there are many prescribed duties which can be learned only after many years of study in their various divisions. Therefore, O sage, please select the essence of all these scriptures and explain it for the good of all living entities, that by such instruction their hearts may be fully satisfied. This is where this phrase in chapter 2 comes from. It's from chapter 1. Yenatma supersedati. It's a refrain in chapter 2. Yayatma suprati or supersedati or Yenatma supersedati. Because this position of self-realization is a position of self-satisfaction. Say it the other way around. If we don't know who we are, we're in ignorance. And ignorance is not bliss. Ignorance is suffering. The root, hundreds of times Prabhupada would say, the root cause of all suffering is ignorance. We just don't know. We're groping in the dark. It's fearful. No light. Looking for happiness. Try this, try that. Not a clue. It's fearful. And at any moment the whole thing is finished, whatever that illusion is of so-called happiness. And everybody knows it, and everyone keeps doing the same donkey program. Investing in something that's temporary, you're going to lose it. And it's gone. And then, you know, comforting each other that, you lost something. And you're not a nice person, you're not a spiritual person unless you comfort people that they've lost something. They invested their whole, sense of happiness in. And meanwhile, the soul is abandoned. Self-abandonment. So, yenatma supersedati, by which one can become fully satisfied, supersedati. Atma supersedati. Happiness, full happiness from the soul, complete happiness, complete satisfaction. So the songs are there, what a popular song during my, whatever you call it, the 60s. You can't get no satisfaction. Rolling Stones, can't get no satisfaction. That became a popular song too, from the times. So, it's necessary, here's Prabhupada's purport, it's necessary to make this distinction. The self is distinct from matter and material elements. It is spiritual in constitution, and thus it is never satisfied by any amount of material planning. And the scriptures say it. So people that want sense gratification, they don't like the scriptures. They, at least they don't go deeply into the scriptures. It's what religion can do for me to make me prosper. There are different methods and prescribed duties recommended in various scriptures. Taking into consideration the fallen condition of the people in general, the sage of Kali, the sages of Naimisharanya, suggested that Sutta Goswami relate the essence of all such scriptures. Because in this age, it is not possible for the fallen souls to understand. And who's going to go through all those scriptures? They're lazy. They're not going to do it. And then even if they did it, their capacity to understand is diminished. And then they get a teacher to teach them, and the teacher misleads them. Oh, so sutta, it's bad. Manda. Sumanda. Very bad. So please explain the essence. And again, Prabhupada goes into the social structure. In the social structure, this is a theme throughout the first canto. It's not in the verse, but it's a theme in how Prabhupada is presenting the first canto to us. There's a social structure that helps one become elevated. But in this age of Kali, the standards of social structure are washed away. In Kali Yuga, it is not possible to execute the rules and regulations of Varnashram. nor is it possible for the people in general to completely sever relations with their families as the Varnashram institution prescribes. I'll not mention the name, but there's one of my godbrothers who's at the stage. He's 55. His children are grown and out of the home and taken care of, married, situated. And he's discussing with his wife about Vanaprastha. And it's turning into other kind of language. It's, you know, grahastha or separation, not Vanaprastha. And he's shared this with me. So, you know, I'll read it again. Nor is it possible for the people in general to completely sever relations with their families as the Varnashram institution prescribes. These are, it's very nice devotees. So, it's not, you know, it's not a rude or crude message. It's a cultural progression in such a way that the soul, through the brahmachari grahastha, through the social system, vanaprastha sannyasa, is to bring the soul further and further and further closer to Krishna. That's the message. And those that receive the message will carry that in their life. But it's Prabhupada's point here. In this age, people are not willing to do that. The whole atmosphere is surcharged with opposition. So, considering this, one can see that spiritual emancipation for the common man in this age is very difficult. So what's the scriptural remedy? It's important to note that this is text 10 and 11 of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam speaking about this topic. You know, it's right out of the gate. Speaking about the ultimate well-being of the soul. So how do we develop this spiritual conception and the spiritual value in an atmosphere that's surcharged with opposition? Certainly a requirement is sincerity. Like, you have to want it. You have to sincerely want it. Like, very much want it. And the distraction factor is huge. Because of all the things that have been mentioned, without repeating them all once again. The influence of the personality of Kali, or the age of Kali, is such that it's very difficult to sustain a sincere desire to go beyond the struggle and reach a permanent solution and achieve, it's like wishful thinking. If there's any idea of self-realization or self-betterment, it's more in terms of, you know, your material situation. Isn't it all the self-help books? Your material situation. Whatever it is, money or health or career or something. And that goes along with the idea of don't depend on God. Just, you know, be independent. Self-help. But when it comes to spiritual, a sincere desire for spiritual transformation, So there must be some descending assistance. And it's a requirement also to reset our definition of things. And resetting a definition of things, or the paradigm is the contemporary word, how you view the world, how you view yourself and things around you. It takes repeated hearing. And gradually, sometimes too gradually, but gradually, there some transformation can come about. So I'll want to focus on this point that Prabhupada is presenting here, this desire for self-realization and what the nature of the self is. The Bhagavatam wants us to take the complete sense of self and self-realization. The Bhagavatam is there for persons who have a spark of sincerity, and it nurtures that spark of sincerity and carries it to the full spiritual conception. Embracing that is a challenge. I'm repeating the point that I made earlier, but we hold on to, it's in the purports also, we hold on to this model that says it's got to feel good, or my senses must be pacified, or something. Like somebody came up after the Sunday program yesterday and said, can you tell me, am I going to get a job? Is there some reason why God is... I don't know the person at all. The sadhu was supposed to touch them with a magic wand and so they can get a job, give their blessings. And it's so that may be a grosser form that for those of us that are practicing sadhakas, it's humorous. But we also hold on to our material conceptions. And as long as we hold on to the material conception, we're not going to have our hands open to receive the spiritual conception. Or our hearts open to receive the spiritual conception. So that sincerity factor needs to be honed or regularly revisited. What is it that we want? In the Sharanagati Japa retreat that I went to, something very nice, very simple, was expressed by Mother Jamuna's close friend, and they're housemaid, is Dina Tarani. And her simple expression was, when chanting is very much a question, and devotional service is very much a question of need, just like that one word, need. Because everyone has needs. We need some prasadam, and we need some rest, and we need friends, and there's things that we need. So what is it that we need? And the message of the Bhagavatam specifically is to really understand who we are, then what our need is. It's like finding a buried treasure or something. you know, it's worth something. It's worth a whole lot. It's worth looking for, but where's the map? And even if I got a map, how do I follow the map? And so on. But when the coming to a spiritual conception means understanding the real value of the thing that's being given, the real value of this human form of life, and the means of excavating the value of human life. Visiting in Arizona, there's a mountain that once upon a time they were finding gold in the mountain. There was a Dutchman who had this secret tunnel. He would go into the mountain and bring out gold, and then he died. So everybody knew that the Dutchman had his secret cave or secret tunnel or secret something, way of getting gold out of that mountain. But he didn't tell anybody. He didn't even tell his children. And so, they call it the lost Dutchman's mine. And they never found how to get the gold out of that mountain. So, like, you know, people, you get some gold and you're wealthy. But spiritual wealth is this one. Everybody wants happiness. Everyone wants suprasana. Be completely satisfied. Everyone would like that. And Bhagavatam is saying, here it is. And that means is lost in this ancient Kali. So here it is. So it requires a willingness to transform our conceptions, let go of the material portion of our conceptions of life and accepting the spiritual dimension. And we can't do it on our own. It's not the Vedic process. If we just needed books, if we didn't need to do what we're doing right now, just get books and read books and become self-realized. But that's not how it works. That's not Krishna's system. Certainly there's a relationship with the reader of Prabhupada's books with the author, our founder Acharya, the translator. But then the system, even within that system, Prabhupada established temples where we could hear and chant together. And then with that hearing and chanting together, then there's some kind of social fabric and standards for how we should conduct ourselves socially. And it's because it's part of the message of the Bhagavatam. Although the real self is Atma, the soul, we're now covered and we're impelled by that covering in conditioned ways of life. That covered the real knowledge of the soul. And so we're trained through the scripture to act in a certain manner according to our position within society that enhances realization of the soul. Minus that, it's not just a matter of karma sannyas. Just, you know, because people can't do that anyways. But even if they could do it anyways, it's incomplete. Just give up. And go to a mountain cave and become self-realized. It can't be done, nor is that the recommended process. This is the recommended process through association, and then when there's association, then there's functions. Anyway, it's kind of obvious, but the spiritual conception must be applied to the social fabric and the teachings and how we imbibe those teachings. And those that are, you know, how do we do it is through the guidance of those that at least have some experience and some wisdom and some degree of effectiveness in accomplishing that. And that's the external part, at least, of what this part of what the process of self-realization entails. Just one last thing that's a little relevant to all of this. I had a very special experience when taking part in this in the Sharanagati retreat. It was really, really an amazing experience. There were several factors, I think. One of this, because we had just done a festival of the Holy Name in Chicago, and the very next weekend was this Japa retreat in Sharanagati, so it was like boom, boom. It was really nice focusing on the Holy Name. And another was being so far away. Sharanagati is super remote. It's too far remote for, you know, any connection with any urban population. And the presence of Jamuna and Dina Tarani, because they're very, both very, very special, very strong Vaishnavis. Anyway, there's other factors too, but I was thinking when we, just one day of preparation and then a 64 round day in our chanting. And because of my GBC chairman position, I have all this stuff that's like on my head all the time, like all the time. So I was thinking, how is this 64 rounds in it? But the mood was a mood of that came from the Festival of the Holy Name experience, a mood of receiving. So I just decided, rather than try to chant, I'm going to try to receive. Normally we think of chanting as something you do. So I was feeling strongly this mood of, let me just receive the Holy Name, try to receive the Holy Name. And a whole lot of things happened. Like one was, we're in a valley, there's mountains on all sides, the kind of, except the northern side is where the, in between some mountain range or something like that. And as the mountains were standing at a distance, all the stuff that normally is just like, just was at a distance. Krishna just took all that stuff away. And I was expecting it to just, to not stay away. But it stayed away. Krishna's mercy. And then, in the course of receiving the Holy Name, I felt that, because the devotees that were there were very strong, determined, absorbed chanters. It was really like a yajna, an intense. And I felt that Krishna's mercy was descending on all the devotees. It wasn't like intellectual, just, and it stayed. The loving quality of Krishna, the loving relationships of the spiritual world were descending upon us. Just because of this receiving mood, because that's what chanting does, or receiving the pure holy name does. It awakens the natural quality of the soul. The natural quality of the soul includes a loving relationship, certainly with Krishna, but with Krishna's devotees. If we chant properly, that's what will happen. And conversely, if we don't chant properly, it's not going to happen. And then the teachings are to guide us in those ways of life, way of life of a soul that's with Krishna. Even while here, even when in contact with these influences of the age of Kali. It went further and further, it fits. Same with this message of the Bhagavatam. It's not something that's meant for you to, like your college studies or something, like figure it out and master it, get your PhD in figuring it out. That's not what spiritual knowledge is. It's not what the Bhagavatam knowledge is. It's descending knowledge. It's mercy. The sages are appealing to Sutta. Please bestow this mercy. You have, the previous verses are describing his qualification. You have the qualification. Please, and you've realized everything that you heard from Sukadeva Goswami, you've realized it. And you can explain it. So can you explain it? The essence of all spiritual knowledge. So the Bhagavatam's message is meant to be received as the holy name is meant to be received, so that the awakened state of our spiritual conception and our spiritual lives can be fully restored. Not just like point the direction and wave goodbye to the person and say, hope you make it. Carry us to the spiritual world. Very powerful if received in the proper way. And then applied. Okay, so any questions or comments? Elish?
My question is, after we finish our rounds, if we feel a sense of love, is that namabhas or is that pure?
Look at your condition of heart and you can answer that question. Most likely namabhas. The position of the position of pure devotional service is not something, we won't know what it is. Process. If one has been fasting, then relief of hunger, satisfaction, strength returning to the body. You experience those things from the eating process after fasting. So, similarly, the process of bhakti, where one's thoughts immediately go to Krishna. Without effort, they just go. In Los Angeles, we're reading the Rath Yatra pastime for the morning class, and this, the section of verses that we happened to be reading was Lord Chaitanya's exhibiting the mood of Srimati Radharani. And Prabhupada was explaining not only the gopis, but all the residents of Vrindavan. So, Venkat, just move your body. Okay. When there's shuddhana, there's no attraction for anything else. The mind doesn't go anywhere else. Prabhupada was saying not only the gopis, the cowherd boys, River Jamuna, all the cows and the peacocks, even the rocks and hills. There was nothing but the shelter of Krishna. Their beings could be attracted to nothing but Krishna. So that's the standard. Anything else? Yes.
Mentioning that self is distinct from matter is spiritual conception is important in our conflict. I mean, the idea that self is distinct from matter.
The idea that what?
Self is distinct from matter.
Something from matter?
Self is distinct from matter.
Self-existence?
Self is distinct from matter.
Self is distinct from matter.
The self distinct from matter, okay.
So, I want to know where it began.
Where it begins?
Where do we begin applying the spiritual conception in our life, considering that we apply it in our own situations, but, you know, the idea that the self is distinct from matter, if suddenly you see in front of you at a bad situation, you wouldn't rather go and explain that you're not this body, so don't worry about it. So,
well, start with yourself rather than somebody else.
But if it is like our family members...
Okay, but just to... Your question was, where does it start? Start with yourself. Just listen. And when you're viewing a circumstance that your life is involved with, it maybe with other people or just sitting in your room, but some interaction, you're feeling something. So, rather than this language that says tell other people, you tell yourself, or internalize that spiritual conception, whether you express it or don't express it. Try to internalize the message so that you're acting from the soul. That's where it begins. Now, an application question is when you're with some family, friend, or relative or something, and they're going through some difficulty, should I or shouldn't I is a matter of discriminating about the person and the time, place, and circumstance. I may or may not. To give an example, Vidura, when he came back after his long pilgrimage and his time spent with Maitreya. He came back as a Mahabhagavata Vaishnava. There was no question about what platform he was on. But when Yudhisthira asked about the residents of Dwaraka, how are our relatives doing? He didn't answer the question. He didn't say, they're dead. They're all dead. And Krishna's gone. He didn't say it. Because he knew that it would be devastating. So he didn't say it. Deliberately. So, one may be discriminating in a particular time, place, circumstance, whether to communicate something or not communicate something and how to. But the starting point is the first responsibility is that I should try to be on that spiritual platform. And when one is on the spiritual platform, Krishna will give very nice direction and how to in different social circumstances. And there's no universal law or rule about what to do in such and such social circumstance. Devotees who are so much on the spiritual platform, their actions are spontaneous. Prabhupada, you know, what he said and did in different times and circumstances was amazing. The range of, so there wasn't a cookie cutter, this is what you do. Where it starts is within. Practice coming to and staying on that spiritual platform.
My question was relating to the relationship with our parents and our relatives. There's so much of attachment involved, and I was wondering how I could apply spiritual conception to that.
Attachment from your side or attachment from their side?
It's both, right?
So start from your side. That's the point. Read in sixth canto, King Chitraketu. And when after his son dies, Narada invites him, please come back to life, and he comes back to life, he sits up. And he begins to explain about, you know, who are my parents? I've had so many parents. Which ones? Which parents are you referring to? Read that section. So it's you know, perspective of a child. He said, I was with my eternal father and you called me back. Thanks, but I'm going back. He called me. I went. And then you called me. So I came here. But, you know, saying, you know, please satisfy and become again the son of your father. It doesn't mean don't care. It just means put things in proper perspective and a spiritual conception. Something else? Yes?
So, good moment. On the same point, when how to properly position ourselves in spiritual conception with our relationships. So you mentioned that we have to start from our own self. So how to instead of totally not cutting it off, you mentioned it should be a detachment and caring. So how?
I didn't say that. It should be a detached what?
Detachment and caring.
Oh, I said that in other circumstances, but okay.
So, how to start applying that? Instead of being a knee-jerk reaction, okay, I will just totally cut off everything.
No, I didn't say that.
My point is if I start to apply it and instead of doing a knee-jerk reaction of totally cutting it off, how to start and how to apply it in a proper way?
I think you already answered your own question. It starts internally. By that I mean, Well, it's, you know, it's the same thing with any relationship, whether it's relatives or whoever, your immediate family. And it starts with yourself. Who am I? And if the self is defined in terms of the relations of this body with other bodies, I'm the father of this one, and I'm the husband of that one, and I'm the son of that one, I'm the cousin of that one, I'm the friend of that one. And none of those things are who we are. The definition of bhakti that's given by Narada starts with that. Sarva upadi vinir muktam. Tat paratvena nirmalam. Applying the spiritual conception starts with I before it goes to mind. Mind is in relation to me. So who am I? And that will help you redefine mind. They're not mine. They're Krishna's. And for some period of time, there's a relationship called husband, and another one called father. But, you know, here's a spirit soul that's been entrusted by Krishna to me to serve as husband serves his wife. Not she's my servant and I call her my wife. I'm serving her. And she's thinking the same. I'm serving my husband. And we're serving our dependent, our child, and so on. But it starts with the I conception. And then that extends naturally to other relatives. Here's a mother and father, and there's a mother-in-law and a father-in-law. And they're spirit souls that Krishna has given me the opportunity to render service. And the nature of service is Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. So that the master of the senses is pleased. That's who they are. And how do I apply the spiritual conception? Maintain the spiritual conception of who I am. And maintain the spiritual conception of who they are. Then in the social context, what's appropriate shapes the behavior. Like, you know, the scriptural example in the Bhagavatam is when Krishna is leaving Hastinapur, or Krishna enters Dwarka. As he's leaving Hastinapur, the members of the Pandava family come. Queen Kunti is respected. She's Krishna's aunt. Krishna pays his obeisances to Yudhisthira. He embraces Arjuna and accepts the respects of Nakula and Sahadeva. He's the personality of Godhead, but he's showing by example. So there's differences of form, of expression, how we express ourselves. But from the spiritual perspective, we're servants. We're servants of everyone. Not like they're my servants and to others I'm the servant of. We're servants of Krishna. And because these are Krishna's parts and parcels, I'm serving this one, I'm serving this one, I'm serving this one. And there's a service relationship. And maintain the relationship in that spiritual conception. It's part of my service to Krishna, to serve my mother-in-law, and to serve my child, and to serve my friend, and from that central position. Mind is determined, is defined by I. If If I'm the servant of Krishna, then what's mine is different opportunities to serve. And Krishna is their maintainer, not me. Krishna is their well-wisher, not me. So I can feel affection for them, but it's all dependent upon Krishna. So that's the detached caring. Ultimately, it's in Krishna's hands, which is true. I can do my part. That's what I do. I serve. And Krishna does his part. He controls.
Thank you.